What we are going to be discussing this evening is the subject of UFOs, friend, foe, or fantasy. And it is a vast topic. I first became interested in unidentified flying objects back in the 1940s, when there were reports of strange things occurring in the atmosphere immediately following World War II, and started to keep my own file, newspaper clippings and so forth, on the things that were happening. Being born to research, so to speak, and being nosy by nature, I decided to follow up these various occurrences or phenomena to try and get some pattern out of them. And I began to notice some amazing things. In 1947, Kenneth Arnold reported seeing some very large objects when he was flying near Yakima, Washington, over Mount Rainier. Then there were others who began to report a multiplicity of sightings of objects in the air. All that we could get from the United States government officially was that they were unidentified flying objects. However, the popular name at the time was flying saucers. And sometimes they were referred to as flying cigars, because the larger ships, some of them as long as football fields by description, were like enormous zeppelins. Yet they moved with such rapidity and defied all the laws of gravity and aerodynamics that we know here on Earth that they were described as flying cylinders and laughingly by some as cigars. Now, UFOs, according to the acceleration of interest in them, are now being sighted, and I quote, at the rate of 6 per hour, according to known reports, that is, throughout the entire world. We're not talking anymore just about the United States, but the reports of many sightings simply are not reported in the papers or in the press. There has been a consistent effort not to panic the public on the part of government, and I can understand why they would take this attitude. We at Christian Research Institute, when our headquarters was located in New Jersey, began a research project on UFOs. Since I was a member of NICAP, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, to try and determine if all the material I had collected and others were collecting had any real semblance of congruity. And by the time NICAP had compiled its material, they had literally thousands of cases of sightings from all over the world. The Soviet Union vigorously denied the existence of unidentified flying objects. However, there was a slip in Pravda which stated that anybody who saw unidentified flying objects was drunk, which meant that they didn't exist, but if you saw one, you were drunk, which meant that no one was going to pay any attention to what you were saying. I recall when I first began to ask questions about this from the standpoint of the theological implications of unidentified flying objects, some of my colleagues said to me, "You have done a marvelous job in research on the cults, the occult, comparative religion, and apologetics, and your other fields of expertise. Leave UFOs alone, because everybody's going to think by the time you get finished that you stepped out of a flying saucer, and no one's going to believe you." I ignored them with characteristic humility and proceeded to study even more on the subject, convinced that truth inevitably must come to the surface. I am happy to say that after a rash of pulp publications, which are largely worthless, and scare tactics by people who have attached all kinds of things to them which have no real significance, there have been serious studies made of so-called unidentified flying objects. I possess, and it has been printed, the only color picture of a UFO taken at an altitude of 800 feet on a clear day in New Jersey, hovering near a seminary that exists. And this particular one, which generally I blow up on a wall about 10 by 15 feet so people can see it, and we have blown up large pictures of it, is of a circular ship with opaque windows circling it. Its dimensions, as far as we're able to determine, fixed at about 50 to 75 feet across, and at least 60 feet thick. It made no noise whatsoever. It was bluish gray in color, hovered, and then lazily took off straight up over the mountains. My assistant took the picture with a 35 millimeter camera on a clear day, and that picture was used on the front cover of a national publication as the first bona fide UFO sighting verified by unimpeachable sources. After all, seminary professors would hardly be lying about unidentified flying objects, particularly since my assistant who took the picture didn't believe they existed until he took the picture. Now he is a firm believer in the existence of unidentified flying objects. The case histories of UFO appearances and the sightings run all the way from Russia, Brazil, France, Africa, to Yugoslavia, where people were panicked, according to reports there, and were, quote, running in shock, close quote, to escape what they thought was a UFO invasion. Anyone who remembers Orson Welles' broadcast in 1938 on the subject of the Martian invasion of the world can well understand why the government doesn't comment too much on unidentified flying objects. Welles did such a good job of convincing people that we really were being invaded from outer space, that people were out in their fields shooting at aircraft, and at cars and state policemen. It's a wonder people weren't killed as a result of this very dramatic presentation. So there is a reason why many of these things are not discussed. I'm indebted for a great deal of the research to the Christian Research Institute staff that spent quite a bit of time collating some 6,000 cases of sightings from bona fide sources, and then culling all of the sources until we arrived at airline pilots, Air Force and Navy pilots, and individual observers who could not possibly have any ulterior motive for testifying to what they had seen. And so I owe a great debt to those who went through a vast amount of material. John Weldon, a close friend and associate in research, did a tremendous job of collating a great deal of this material. In fact, I've encouraged him to publish it, and it is being published in a nice paperback book by Harvest House, A Christian Analysis of Unidentified Flying Objects. Now, you may not agree with Mr. Weldon's conclusions, but you will certainly have to pay attention to Mr. Weldon's research, because he has done his homework, and the sources are unimpeachably authentic. In 1965, 1967, there are large international incidents concerning UFO sightings, particularly the summer of 1972 and in October of 1973. NBC released a white paper on the subject of unidentified flying objects. The most startling report came, however, in the fall of 1973, when two shipyard workers in Pascagoula, Mississippi, were taken aboard a UFO for 20 minutes and given a complete physical examination. The government investigated the report in detail. The conclusion of the investigators, independent and government, is that there is, quote, no reason to suppose that these men were not recounting some type of experience or incident, close quote. That's a nice way of saying something happened to them, but without saying it was actually aboard an unidentified flying object. Mr. Weldon points out that UFOs have seemed to lose their shyness in recent years. Sightings were rare in the 40s, speeded up in the 50s, died off in the 60s, and have accelerated in the 1970s. Strangely enough, the first major sightings of UFOs followed within 3 years of the major explosion of an atomic weapon on Earth, which lends credence to some of the contactees, some of the people who claim they have talked to the inhabitants of flying objects. that they became interested in Earth when they noted accelerated radiation coming from our planet and had arrived at the conclusion that we had begun to experiment with atomic weapons. I suppose having observed Earth for a long period of time, they concluded that perhaps they had better look in on us rapidly. Our long record of destroying each other might extend with rocket power to other parts of the solar system. And therefore, investigation obviously began. One of the leading Soviet scientists, Dr. Felix Zeigel, has stated that in the USSR, there has been an acceleration, a constant stream of reported sightings. He says they are well documented, quote, from every corner of the USSR, close quote. So the Soviet has moved from the 1950s, when they said you were drunk if you saw it, to the 1970s, where there's an awful lot of drunk Russians, because people are seeing it from every corner of the Soviet Union. Now, there's been a tremendous fascination, of course, with UFOs, particularly in the light of Eric Von Daniken's books, The Chariot of the Gods, The Gold of the Gods, other books was God and Astronaut, things of this nature. We're going to be lecturing on that subject tomorrow evening. Chariot of the Who will be our subject tomorrow night, where we'll be discussing all of these supposed ideas about God being an astronaut. But this has focused a tremendous amount of attention on the subject of unidentified flying objects. But the interest in UFOs stems not just from occultic sources and from people like Von Daniken, but this is quite significant. A Gallup poll released November 29, 1973, indicated that some 15 million adult Americans have personally seen unidentified flying objects. In 1966, a similar survey by Gallup indicated that 5.5% of the adult population had seen UFOs. So, the sightings are now double what they were 7 years ago. The 1973 poll, incidentally, showed that 51% of those interviewed believe that unidentified flying objects are real. Far from just being science fiction buffs and people who are interested in them being kooky, and there are kooks and oddballs that have been interested in them, there is now a respectable inquiry being directed by scientists, reputable physicists, and astronomers into the subject of unidentified flying objects. And the basic thesis, which I enunciated in the 1950s and again in the 1960s through Christian Research Institute, I enunciate again today. These findings must have theological implications for the Church of Jesus Christ. We simply cannot ignore the possibility that we are dealing with something either extraterrestrial or ultra-dimensional. And the Church has to begin to analyze what the world has come to recognize as objective reality. Now, part of the great picture and development of UFOlogy, as it is called, points to the fact that organizations such as the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, with representatives in 50 countries, 38 consulting PhDs in various sciences, have now begun serious in-depth studies of UFOs. Senator Barry Goldwater just recently joined the prestigious National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena. He himself is a brigadier general in the Air Force Reserve. He joined the Board of Governors. The President of the United States, when he was a senator, directed inquiries to the Pentagon concerning UFO sightings, which his constituency was concerned about. He was told then, as a senator, it was classified information, and Senator Goldwater was told, quote, it was none of his blank business, close quote. Therefore, since these two sources in their investigation have had difficulty obtaining confirmation, there is no reason to suppose that the average American is going to have any success whatsoever getting official confirmation from governmental sources. On Dick Cavett's show, an interview took place between astronaut James McDevitt, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who is chairman of the Department of Astronomy at Northwestern University, and Charles Hixon, one of the men who reportedly boarded the UFO at Pascagoula. This took place November 2nd, 1973. Dr. Hynek is a convert who before poo-pooed unidentified flying objects and explained them away on various scientific grounds. He now heads an organization seriously investigating with hundreds of scholars all over the world the implications scientifically of unidentified flying objects and the implications that they have for those of us who are living on this earth. In the course of my investigation of these things, I've been struck by the fact that people seem to bend over backwards to explain away unidentified flying objects. Here are some of the explanations which have been given at various times by the Air Force and by official sources. Artificial satellites, temperature inversions or changes, light refraction, high-altitude weather balloons, mirages, shooting stars, marsh gas, ball lightning, and of course, the old familiar hallucination. All used as a means of discouraging inquiry into unidentified flying objects. Now, I'm sure that you're sitting there saying, has Martin ever been on a flying saucer? No, doesn't want to go either. Has Martin ever seen flying saucers? Yes, certainly. And they are of different sizes and shapes. The question in my mind is not what, but who. I know what they are. Hynek knows what they are. The United States government knows what they are. The Soviet government knows what they are. Everybody who's done any investigation in depth knows what they are. They are some form of extremely sophisticated aircraft, not made by any government occupying territory on our earth that we know of. Their capacities are utterly astounding. They have been clocked at speeds in excess of 25,000 miles per hour in our atmosphere. At speeds that rapid, you would burn up normally. Yet, they make right angle turns at speeds of 5,000 miles per hour in our atmosphere. You couldn't make a right angle turn at that speed without disintegrating in our atmosphere. They go straight up or straight down, left or right, and accelerate from a few hundred miles per hour to thousands of miles per hour in seconds. They appear to defy all the known laws of gravity. And scientists have suggested that this is perhaps because they generate their own gravitational field based upon our poles and some form of magnetic induction. We do not know the explanation, but we know that the aircraft exist. UFOs are inevitably characterized as a secret weapon of the enemy. The Russians tell their people that they're theirs, and our people are told that they belong to us. Everybody's scared to death to talk about whose they really are because nobody truly knows. The only thing that is known is that we are definitely trying to explain naturally and with all forms of evasion what quite obviously disturbs the heads of the military and of our governments. There's an interesting book called UFOs, Past, Present, and Future, which deals with cases of UFO sightings from 1947 through 1973 with consistent verification. I myself have verification of more than 600 cases which defy any of the explanations given by the federal government or any investigating commission. You just simply cannot explain them away. I have seen films taken in Utah of three UFOs in living color traveling for a period of about 45 seconds, and they are moving similar to floating ping pong balls. And you can't get these films anymore. I've tried to get them back again, but I've seen them. And against the blue sky, these three objects move clearly in front of you, photographed with a 16-millimeter camera, and then, just as rapidly, take off into the clouds. They are solid objects, and their dimension is approximately what I cited before concerning the ones which I have seen, at least the one which we were able to photograph. There's a good deal of verification from very interesting and, I believe, definitely sincere sources that point out that UFOs cannot be ignored. Now, the Condon Report was issued. Physicist Edward Condon headed it up as a result of the Air Force trying to whitewash the subject of UFOs. They studied from 1966 to 1968 to undertake a depth study of UFOs. The report came out negative. But the Condon Report was rejected in 1970 by no less a body than the American Association for the Advancement of Science, who declared, quote, "The Condon conclusions are scientifically unacceptable," close quote. So we are now right back where we started, only with one more leg up. We are aware of the fact that there is good scientific background behind studied investigation of UFO phenomena. J. Allen Hynek, who had served as a learned skeptic on Project Grudge. I hope you noticed the name of these projects. First, there was Project Blue Book. That was closed down after 20 years. Then there was Project Grudge. And after Project Grudge, they moved to Project Cyclops. They might just as well have classified all of them Project Blindness, because no one really wanted to see what was going on. And if they did, they were constantly telling the public that these things could be easily explained as natural phenomena. We see now that these things simply are not dismissed so lightly. The North American Defense Command has posted for all its pilots a directive which says that they are to, and I quote, "report immediately all other aircraft and unidentified flying objects," close quote. So the Air Force apparently takes very seriously what they tell the public doesn't exist. Report it immediately. Report what? What isn't there? Because they must know something is there, and something that has tremendous implications. Now, there have been UFO sightings all through history. And if you go back and study it, you'll find since 1897, there have been more than 2,500 contacts with unidentified flying objects. That is with individuals, ships, all different types of stories connected with UFOs. The number of recorded observations for all time up to 1954 was approximately 10,000. Since then, it has risen in sightings to the millions. Mr. Weldon says, and I quote him, "We can only offer the evidence and sources for consideration. We can only say that men noted strange objects in the skies and left their evidences of their observations as far back as 45,000 B.C. So there are people who, through the ages, have been noticing phenomena. What struck me is that when I started to study it, I began to notice so many people were describing the same thing, only in the language of their time or their culture. And I'd like to just look at a couple of these because I think they're fascinating. The early Hindu literature, which predates the Christian era by thousands of years, contains references to, quote, celestial and aerial cars. close quote. Now, you wouldn't expect an Indian guru to be talking about a rocket ship. But if he talked about some kind of a celestial car, not as we think of an automobile, but some type of a box or some kind of a device which floated in the sky, that made sense to him. And there are records taken from the Indian civilization which describe aerial cars and bright clouds in the sky. There are many references in the ancient Tibetan books, which talk about these very things. The writings of certain Roman historians, well corroborated in other areas. There are records of incidents of unidentified flying objects in the skies over Rome in the 4th and the 3rd in the 3rd centuries. One particular scholar, Dr. Wilkins, specifies that Roman historians and scholars, among them Pliny, Seneca, Tacitus, Lycosthenes, several other chroniclers of the time, all make mention of this phenomenon. Titus Livius, Julius Obsequiens list 8 specific locations of sightings extending from 1 at the Gulf of Venice in 213 BC to Umbria in 16 BC. Pliny spoke of a fiery shield, that's a direct quote, that swept across the sky, and the historian Livy wrote of phantom ships for celestial craft which were sighted in his time, 60 to 17 BC. The Egyptians, who were no fools as scientists in their times, noted the phenomena of UFOs. A papyrus record at the annals of Pharaoh Thutmose III, 1600 BC, mentions circles of fire in the sky. The circles were as bright as the sun, according to the record, very numerous, and they dominated the sky. A terrible stench, a factor common to many modern reports, was associated with the appearance of these circles of fire. One of the things that we've noticed about some UFO sightings in our own day is that when a UFO lands, often the earth is scorched in a circle or in the shape of that ship. There is either radiation at that point detected or a terrible odor. And this particular reference to a bad odor goes all the way back to the Egyptians, 1600 BC, who noted that this particular type of celestial craft generated a most disagreeable odor. Now, we still don't know what the odor is, but we know this much. It certainly influenced the Egyptians enough to write down the things that they saw. Now, I could go on citing instance after instance. August 12, 1883, the first known photograph of a UFO was taken by Jose Bonilla, a Mexican astronomer associated with the Zacatecas Observatory. He'd been observing the sun. He suddenly saw an army of objects crossing its front. He counted nearly 150 of them, cigar and spindle-shaped, which show in the photo. This was the first photograph of these particular objects. I'm impressed, however, not with the great history of the description of phenomena, but with something that happened in our own country because it was a great embarrassment to those who are trying to say UFOs don't exist. In 1952, the Air Force was scrambled in Washington, D.C. because UFOs were buzzing the White House. They showed clearly, I'm reading the report, on the radar screen, a tracking of 5 in a fleet. One of them achieved Mach plus speed at 93,000 feet. Project Blue Book to collect data again was undertaken. This particular buzzing of the White House in 1952 was an occasion that the newspapers could not ignore. The restricted air zone around the White House is one of the best defended areas in the world. The best jet pilots are assigned to protect the capital of the United States. The UFOs appeared in force. The jets were scrambled immediately. A true UFO chase was underway. The Jets didn't have a chance. When the Jets came screaming into the White House airspace, the UFOs left the scene at 7,000 miles per hour on the radar screen. Now, you have to stop for just a second and think about that figure of speed. We are talking about a transcontinental plane, the Concorde, which flies from Paris to New York in 2 hours and 25 minutes and travels at 1,500 plus miles per hour. This is in 1975. We are talking about 1952. And we are talking about UFOs on a radar screen with jets on the same radar screen tracking them. The speeds can be calibrated. Any radar expert will tell you that. The UFOs accelerated away from the jets in 1952 at a speed in excess of 7,000 miles per hour, which is roughly 4.25 times the speed of the Concorde, more than 20 years ago, which indicates that either the radar technicians didn't see anything on the screen, or the jet pilots didn't see anything when they were tracking them, and they said they did. Luminous objects that disappeared straight up with extreme rapidity, the report. Or we are faced with UFOs who apparently can come and go as they please in any part of the world and are impervious to attack by any form of aircraft that any nation can mount against them. The jets were called back, and the pilots were all shaken up. No sooner had the pilots returned to base than the alert sounded again, and they were scrambled. The UFOs were back. This game of hide-and-seek went on for 6 hours, recorded on the radar screens by the Navy and the Air Force, until they decided that they had played enough, and then took off at a very great speed, leaving very red-faced F-94 pilots and individuals who kept saying there wasn't anything, trying to explain what they were chasing.